The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right, enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
That I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong? Disconnect.
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. He's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Very nice to have you with me on The Doctor Is In on this E-Person Monday. As I look back over the E-Persons, if I don't say email, it's gender insensitive. And if it's anything I am, it is linguistically inclusive. So I don't want to say male, because some of these come from, and I was going to say female, but again, it's got male in it. Some of these come from XX people. Whew, that should be safe, isn't it? Well, actually, no, it's not, because some people can't say that someone is a woman if she's XX. Nevertheless, we'll get to those shortly. Had to find a way to answer a lot of these. Because depending upon the particular week, the e-persons that come in have to do with situations or a request for some type of referral in a certain area or a request for a particular book that I have that might address what they're asking about, or in a very, well, thankfully, small percentage of cases, to correct me, tell me where I'm wrong. And that happens so often, I had to tell my wife, will you please quit sending me these emails and tell me in person? So we will get to those shortly. When I was in grad school, I was searching for a PhD dissertation topic. There was a guy named Thomas Szasz. If I've got my names right, I haven't had time to look up Szasz, but I think Szasz was talking about how psychotherapy doesn't really work as much as people think it works, at least not for the reasons it's supposed to work. It may work because of a relationship, because of what they call the therapeutic alliance. It may work because of support. It may work because somebody is gently listening to you, but in terms of the actual practice, although I must qualify this, cognitive behavioral therapy has shown a lot of success. So that said, one of the things that has been coming to my attention is that in some cases, the particular brand of therapy practiced or individually practiced with someone has actually caused trouble. It's actually caused struggles. For example, it's not unusual for me to get a parent in my office who tells me that they have gone previously to a therapist of some type, social worker, counselor, child development, some type, who gave them a lot of advice about dealing with this recalcitrant youngin', and it just blew up. It didn't work well at all. So as I discuss the situation with them, I say, well, were you told this? No, nothing like that ever came up. And in my mind, this is child raising 101. Okay. Now, I'm not impugning the therapist. A lot of them are quite uncomfortable dealing with parental issues. But the point being is that there can be times when a therapist can actually hurt the situation. And one of those times, I'm noticing more and more of this, is an adult child severing the relationship with their parents at the behest or suggestion or option given by a therapist. Now, how does this happen? Not unusual when someone comes to a therapist about relationship issues or life struggles. They'll explore, they'll dig, and what will come out will be the client's perception of the factors involved in their own struggles in life, their unpleasantness, their sadness, their frustrations, their poor choices, whatever it might be that brought them to the therapist. Commonly, their upbringing comes up. Or, just as commonly, their adult relationship with one or both of their parents comes up. As they describe it, it sounds like a troublesome relationship. It sounds like a relationship, as they describe it, that is manipulative on the part of the parent. Or judgmental. Or frustrating. Or unpleasant. Now keep in mind that therapists need to see that when someone is describing their situation to us, you have to skillfully look for how much their subjective perception is reality. We all do it. We all have our own lens that we interpret events through. And sometimes that lens is pretty accurate and sometimes it's not. And sometimes it's very hard to know. And some of the worst at this are adolescents. Because if you sit and talk to an adolescent, they're going to tell you how terrible and awful and wretched and unreasonable and psycho throwback their parents are, when in fact these could be the most reasonable people in the world. But the kid just doesn't like what their parents are doing in terms of raising them. And this can happen very often in adult relationships. You can describe someone in your life, say a parent, as someone who is a main source of your unpleasantness, of your frustration, of your sadness, whatever it is, negative. And the degree to which you describe it makes the parent sound pretty bad. Or even if it doesn't, it makes it sound like your reaction to your parent or parents is causing you great distress. So, much psychotherapy is very much secular in its practice. A religious perspective, a religious worldview doesn't come in. So that even if this person is at some level still connected to their faith, which says honor thy father and thy mother, or forgive, or practice virtue, or be tolerant, it is overridden by the fact that their self, and that could be self-image, that could be self-esteem, is the contributing factor in the decision. That's the main one. That's the one that says if yourself is suffering, as you see it, then you need to put distance between the cause of that suffering. And, again, as you see it, if that's your parents or your upbringing, then you need to, at the very least, retreat from that relationship, and you could sever it for your own well-being, because therapy is focused on the self, on the emotional peace of the self, the emotional stability of the self. So the idea that even if your mom is difficult, to learn how to get along with her better may not be the focus of therapy. The focus may be, well, if she's difficult, you might have to decide to put boundaries on your relationship with her because she sounds toxic. She sounds like a narcissist. And once you start flinging around words like that, then what is a priority option? Well, get away from the toxicity. Separate from the narcissist. And I'm seeing more parents tell me their adult children have gone to therapy and as a result have decided, indeed, it's time to put distance between me and mom or dad. Now, one might say, well, no, obviously this adult child has had a long-standing problem with the parent. And the therapist just heard all this and then gave him that as an option. But the adult child was headed that way anyway. And that could be. But it's interesting because the pursuit of the self in much therapy overrides the impulse to get along better with people in your life that are hard to get along with, or that you might have a history of friction with, like a mom or a dad. Oh, I've sat across so many parents in my office who said, yeah, my daughter no longer talks to us. And I'll ask, has she gone to therapy? Yes. One more connect the dot. If she's gone to therapy, you're probably safe in assuming she's discontent or frustrated or distressed about some aspect of her life. So she goes to therapy. Well, if she's unhappy, distressed, frustrated, anxious, angry about that, she's going to search for a cause. And much of the time, we don't look at ourselves for the cause. We look at other people in our lives to say, that's the cause of my distress. And of course, a main cause is often pointed to as the parents. This is Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Hello, I'm Marianne Kuharski with Pro-Life Across America. Did you know that a billboard can save a baby's life? When our billboards and radio ads are running, we receive hundreds of calls from those seeking pregnancy information and support. Every caller is connected to a local center offering free ultrasound and confidential counseling. Won't you join us in this life-saving effort? Donate today and help us do more. No gift is too small. That's ProLifeAcrossAmerica.org.
Life's uncertainties can arise without warning, and without a clear legal plan, your wishes may go unfulfilled. Through our partnership with MyCatholicWill.com/AVE, you can designate guardians for your children and allocate your assets to the individuals and causes you hold dear. Create your will at no cost from the privacy of your home. This Thanksgiving, take time to prioritize your family's peace of mind. MyCatholicWill.com/AVE.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
when I was outside of the church, there was always an unsettled feeling. There was always a feeling of something missing and something not complete. The deal clincher is we found our way to our parish, and we met just an incredible pastor. We learned things that we had never been taught. Wouldn't be the person that I am without the church and without the sacraments, particularly the Eucharist. I can't live without it.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
My producer man is Andrew Krucek there in Ann Arbor. This is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio Communications and EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. You can also hear it some 400 plus domestic stations, some 500 worldwide, and Sirius Satellite Channel 130, as well as the many, many, many apps that our networks, our affiliate networks, and independent stations have. Dr. Ray, I have emailed you before about a situation with my mother-in-law. I was anxious about announcing our fourth baby to her. Yes, ma'am, this is a common theme. When you get beyond the 1.86 children that you are now allowed to have in our culture, oftentimes your relatives are the very ones who look at you like you're some kind of idiot. What are you doing? Maybe you could recall that email, Dr. Ray. That would help with context. But anyway, and she's adding this now. She, meaning my mother-in-law, and my sister-in-law, which I'm going to assume is the daughter of mother-in-law, took a vacation to Ireland. She posted on the family text chat all the pictures. I acknowledged some, looked at all of them, but didn't respond to all of the pictures. I know you can't. They send you 274. You know, you can't put a thumbs up on all of them. There were big batches of pictures I didn't say anything about. There were a lot, and she capitalizes L-O-T, lot. But every so often, I too will dump a bunch of pictures of the kids on that group chat. I did that. Without having acknowledged her most recent pictures. Well, you didn't acknowledge all of them. Acknowledge some. And then she says this in parentheses. This sounds so dumb and trivial written out like this. So basically, she puts a bunch down. Now, I'm going to assume the kids were involved in this vacation. So basically, she puts a bunch down, and then after some days, I put a bunch down. Ha! She goes, so silly sounding, and then she has a little emoji with a woman holding her head. She is now ignoring me. This must be the mother-in-law. Ignoring my texts and my invitations to get together. She is very offended. Oh, boy, I hate that word. I'm so offended by what you did. How dare you do that to me? That I did not acknowledge all of their pictures, but then I still gave a bunch of my own. How awful. Of my own kids. I, unfortunately, am a people pleaser. Well, that's not bad. It just can be tricky when you're trying to decide what to please them about. I hate that I'm this way. But my mother-in-law and I have come a long way. I genuinely love her and care about her. Should I apologize? Well, first of all, you didn't do anything wrong. But if you think saying I'm sorry that I didn't acknowledge all the pictures. Isn't that interesting? She says you have 274 pictures and you got to go through them and put a thumbs up or a heart on all of them. What's that say? I'm afraid to apologize because she is often still very hostile and angry, but I am a Christian, so I'm willing to eat humble pie here. What is the best thing to do? My husband has said that we just, quote, wait for it to blow over. Now, this is his mom now. He's giving you this advice on his mom. That's what his family does when she flips out like this. Well, think about it. If she's going to get that upset to temporarily, we hope, sever the relationship. Why? Because you didn't acknowledge every single one of her pictures, and then you had the audacity to put up some of her grandchildren? Then I don't know how it's possible not to offend her in some other way in the future that you have no idea what you did. I got to believe you didn't even know what you did, unless your motive was, I'll show her. I got pictures of my own. What's the best choice here, Dr. Ray? I wish it wasn't consuming my thoughts, but I hate the tension. This isn't the first time she's ignored us. She's carved us out before. On plenty of occasions, she's a very broken person. I wish I cared less about what others thought. I'm working on changing this obnoxious behavior of mine. Well, I don't think it's obnoxious. That's not the word I would use. I'd say vulnerable, susceptible, easily influenced behavior of yours. This is all just a judgment call. Sounds like your husband is very familiar with his mother's propensities. And he just simply says, she gets like this, there's not a whole lot you can do about it until ultimately the time passes and she settles down and decides, okay, we had a family gathering and you were relatively pleasant and she likes you again for the moment, perhaps. You could say, for your own peace of mind, and I'm not sure if it'll make any difference with your mother-in-law, but you could say for your own peace of mind, I'm so sorry, I didn't acknowledge all the pictures. I simply thought by acknowledging most of them, that was an indication that I appreciated all of them. And that's all you say. You don't go on to say, you know, I'm so busy, and you had so many beautiful pictures, and I just thought, oh my, I should acknowledge all of them, but I didn't, and I'm so sorry. Just simply say, I acknowledged the pictures, I appreciated them, I just didn't respond to all of them. And don't say, because there were so many of them, it would have taken me a half an hour to put a thumbs up on all of them. But the deeper issue is, this is what, according to your description, she does. You said she's carved us out before. So my guess would be it's only a matter of time before this happens again. If you say to yourself, for your own peace of mind, if you say, I did what I thought I needed to do to assuage her. You didn't. I don't personally think you did a whit wrong. Nothing apology worthy. But if you wish to say, okay, just sorry about that. I just thought by acknowledging some, I acknowledged all. That's all. Now, my guess would be she'll still be upset. In her mind, that's a chump excuse. Okay. But what you're doing is not necessarily to assuage her. It's to assuage you. You are the one who can be at peace because you said, I did what I could do. And how she takes it from here, I can't do a thing about it. And your husband, who said, just let it blow over. That's what she does. May understand his mother quite a bit. He grew up with her. But you at least would say, well, I didn't totally let it blow over. I didn't ignore it. I did something I thought might, I emphasize might, smooth out the situation. All right, Andrew. Start that music. 3, 2, yeah, I missed it. Clock's a little off. This is Dr. Ray.
Looking for a more peaceful family by Christmas? Join Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak for a free live webinar, Have a More Peaceful Family by Christmas. It's Thursday, November 13th from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Discover practical ways to reclaim Advent with purpose, prayer, and joy. Don't let Advent slip by in stress and distraction. Join the Popchaks and turn this season into a sacred success story. Register now at AveMariaRadio.net and make this Advent your most intentional yet.
What does the 10th commandment condemn? When the Lord God told us not to covet our neighbor's goods, He denounced envy, avarice, and greed as the root of theft, robbery, and fraud. Greed, the Catholic Catechism tells us, is the desire to amass earthly goods without limit. Avarice arises from a passion for riches and the power that attends to their possession. He who loves money never has money enough, says the Roman Catechism. The 10th commandment also requires us to banish envy from our hearts, reminding us that the devil's envy of God brought death into the world. Envy is defined as sadness seeing another's goods, accompanied by the immediate desire to possess those goods. Note, our Lord placed being poor in spirit at the top of the list of His 8 Beatitudes. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
He is honored by the Church as a saint with the title of the Angelic Doctor.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Thomas Aquinas wrote a basic textbook for young theology students that became the Church's most famous guide to the faith, the Summa Theologica. It helped him earn the title Doctor of the Church. He died in 1274.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
This is Cy Kellett. Join me for Catholic Answers Live. It's 2 hours dedicated to Catholic apologetics and evangelization. Designed for Catholics and non-Catholics alike, it's your opportunity to hear from and talk with some of the leading apologists and theologians in the Church today. You've got questions? We've got Catholic answers. Catholic Answers Live, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Oh, hi, Dr. Ray. Thanks for taking the call. I listen to you frequently. So
I don't listen to me frequently. Go ahead.
Well, maybe you should.
Had a situation that's kind of scary last night. I was sitting in a sports bar with a couple of my friends, and I casually pointed over to a couple of old guys sitting across from us, and I said, "Oh man, that looks like us in 15 years." And my friend said, "Ray, that is us. That's a mirror." Oh, Dr. Ray, I have a friend who is a nun, meaning he has no religious affiliation. I don't know if that means he's not a believer in God at all, or just no religious affiliation, and a widower. He says if his health deteriorates to where he could be a burden on his children, he is fine with assisted suicide. What would you suggest to dissuade someone who isn't persuaded by any religious-based reasons? I would use his thinking. I would ask him several things. What's a burden? What would that mean? How much of a burden would you have to be? If they had to look in on you once a day, is that a burden? If you're in a hospital bed wired up to all kinds of mechanical things to keep you breathing, is that a burden? So what's a burden? How do you decide a burden? Then I would say, what if they disagree with what you think is a burden? What if in their view, you're dad, you're not a burden? And what if one of them says, "I don't think dad's a burden and I'll take care of him," and the other two say, "No, he's a burden"? So how do you decide who to listen to decide what a burden is? Then I would ask them, are you saying in all this that there is no God? I don't know. Okay. So if you don't know and God could exist, would you acknowledge that he would say your life is not yours to choose to end? If God exists. Well, I don't think he exists. Okay, I think you think that, but would you acknowledge he could exist? That you could be wrong? I suppose. You want to make a decision on that basis then? Because if he exists, he says don't do this. I'd also ask him this. It is easy to say, I'll check out via assisted suicide if I'm a burden. Because it hasn't happened. When it happens, it changes one's mind. Now, I'm not saying you say this to him, but there's a psychological principle founded on research that says we're not very good at predicting how we're going to behave in a highly intense emotional situation. We can talk a certain way. We can say, well, if I'm going to be a burden, that's it. I'm checking out. I'm not putting anybody up to that. But then when the time comes, and you're faced with that decision, it's not so clear now. Well, you know, I didn't think I was that much of a burden. Or I'm a burden, but I still don't want to die. So when the time comes, the whole scenario changes. The context changes. I've used this example before. I get a lot of marital situations where somebody has had an adulterous relationship. The spouse will say, I always, always said, definitely, that if my spouse was unfaithful, the marriage is over. I could never be married to someone I can't trust. And yet here they are in marriage counseling wanting to repair their marriage. Genuinely so. As their spouse is contrite, the spouse wants to repair the marriage, the spouse wants to do whatever he or she can to regain the trust because there's kids involved, there are finances involved, there's an 18-year history involved, there are other families involved. It was so easy to say, that's it. I would never put up with an adulterous relationship in a marriage. That's it. Over. No explanation. No apology. No passing go. Do not collect $200. And then, if it happens, the whole context changes. It is real now. And I think you can draw a parallel to someone who says, if I am a burden, I would want to simply go to someone to kill me. And then, when the time comes, how much of a burden do you have to be? And what if others don't think you're a burden? What if one of the children doesn't think you're a burden? You take a vote? You decide? And what if someone wants to love you enough to say, I don't care how much of a burden you are. You're my father. I don't want you to die. at your own hand because of this? Another argument I'd use with him is, would you want to do this to your children? What if they don't want to live with the idea that their dad committed suicide? What if their view is that that's insulting to them? That they would say, we want to take care of you, Dad. We don't want you to decide that we're not willing or capable to love our father in that way. Dad, you're taking the decision out of our hands. Let us have some credit for loving our father. Dr. Ray.
'60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The sixth commandment, you shall not commit adultery. This commandment is wide-ranging in its implications. It forbids us not only from committing the very act of adultery, but also other sexual sins such as fornication or premarital sex, watching pornography, and speaking lewdly. Likewise, homosexual acts and acts of masturbation are also forbidden us. And the Lord himself even enjoins us to a purity of mind that we should not freely entertain lustful thoughts. And so it's wide-ranging, it's challenging, but it's in service of the great sacredness of human life, which comes from sexual activity. So we thank God for this great gift of sexuality, and we ask for his grace to live it with great reverence. The sixth commandment, you shall not commit adultery.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Let us strive to know the Lord. Quick question to you and me right now. Is that what you and I are doing every single day? When you and I wake up every day, do we strive to know Jesus or not? In the Old Testament, in the same book of Hosea, a little bit later on, it's in chapter 14, the Lord says through the prophet, "My people perish." Or in another translation, "My people are being destroyed because of a lack of knowledge." Not a lack of data. We got tons of data. Not a lack of information. We got a lot of information. Not just about things that are happening in the world. We got a lot of data, a lot of knowledge, a lot of information about God. But not a lot of intimacy with God. Not a lot of relationship with God. Not a lot of friendship. That's the cry of God's heart. God wants to give himself to us in the incredible gift of friendship, and we're not taking advantage of it.
You know, one of my kids had a big head, and so as he was getting older and sitting in a high chair at 6 months, 7 months, his head just kind of wobbled. So he sort of, to me, looked like he was always listening to jazz. This is Dr. Ray here on E-Person Monday of The Doctor Is In, catching up on some past emails when my server decided not to send them to me. But I'm finally catching up. I'm only about 4 weeks behind on the E-Persons. I turned 50 this year. My youngest child, I have 6, graduated high school. Kids 5 and 6 still live at home. I work 3 days a week. Okay, this is still a busy mom. I'm taking online courses to complete my college degree. And here's where the wrinkle comes in. On my days off from work, I watch my grandchildren, ages 3, 2, and 7 months. I had always thought that I would have more time to pursue my interests once my own kids had reached adulthood. Fake you out, huh, Mom? While I love my grandkids and I do want to spend time with them. I do not enjoy the daily grind of parenting when I'm not the parent. This is me now intervening. Especially when you got a 3-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 7-year-old. They can't entertain themselves. You got to be hyper-vigilant, on watch all the time. You're gone to college. You still got 2 kids left at home, and you work 3 days a week. So here's the question I would have. What is motivating your son or daughter, or whomever this is, to ask you to do this? Or to expect you to do this? I mean, I would wonder why they're not looking at the situation and saying, hey, she's pretty busy. She's still got kids at home. She's working. She's gone to school. And these are little kids. Whoa. That's not happening. So, my first question is, and I can't know this from your e-person, what's the dynamic here? What is going on? What is their motives? Then she gets to the crux. How do I tell my kids to look for other daycare? Well, let me answer that. You don't necessarily tell them to look for other daycare. You tell them what your situation is. We'll get to that in a second. And she says, unless, of course, Dr. Ray, you think I'm being completely selfish. Hold on there, Mom. What's the matter what I think? This is your situation. You got to judge what your limits are, not me. I can't say, well, I just think you're being selfish. You got 3 sweet little grandkids and you're not wanting to watch them. What's wrong with you? I would be totally out of line. Completely. I'm here to help you navigate the situation that you'd like to navigate. And here's what I can't help you with. I can't help you with how they're going to interpret it. They could be very reasonable about it and say, you know, Ma, you're right. Okay, that is a lot. Can you do it one day? That would seem to be a nice compromise. So rather than telling them to look for other daycare, you tell them, hey, guys, I thought I could do it. But given that I still got kids at home, I'm going to school and I'm working and they're little, it's too much for me. You can even say, I'm old. You're not. But you can always pull out the age-old card. Show them your ID. Show them your driver's license picture. You know, they'll know you're old when you start to look like your driver's license picture. And you say, that's not a bad picture. Or you can't get near the candles on your cake because the heat keeps driving you back. So I would tell them, hey, guys, I thought I could do it. I can't. And as a matter of fact, I'm not sure I'm doing it very well. That's a good one, too. You point out you're not sure you're doing it very well. It's hard to keep up with those 3 little ones. I can give you one day a week. There you go. There you go. Now, if they get upset with you, and that's coming up here in a second, if they get upset with you, then that's kind of a sign that they're sort of expecting you to save them money. They're expecting you to pick up these pieces that somehow you should enthusiastically and energetically embrace the chance to watch 3 preschoolers. She says, unless, of course, you think I'm being completely selfish. That's none of my business what I think. And I should be grateful to have this time with them. And then she says a great line. She says, except it feels more like purgatory than heaven. P.S. My 76-year-old mother watches them on the days that I work. So this presents a whole other level of guilt. Now, I'm not going to read any further. I'm going to speculate. But the reason she feels guilty is because if she doesn't watch them 3 days a week, they could approach grandma. Well, great-grandma. Sorry about that. Grandma. Grandma's already watching them 3 days a week. Great-grandma. And say, well, can you pick up the slack? Boy, that's real. If they do that, I'm not going to comment on them. But if they do that, that's kind of like saying we don't want to pay for daycare. And even though she is 76 and even though she is a great grandma, come on, watch them 4 days a week for us. Now, if she says, I'd love to have them 4 days a week, I'm upset that I only got them two. Okay, well, then problem solved. But it sounds like what you're saying is they'll turn to her and she's already overloaded. Dr. Ray, and here's the line I suspected was coming. I don't want my siblings upset with me if my mother takes over more days watching the kiddos. Well, here's my question. First of all, if they're going to be upset with you, does that imply that they don't want to watch the kids? Does it indicate that they work, so therefore they can't watch the kids? Does it indicate that they think you are duty-bound to watch the kids? And why would they be upset with you because you're not the one having great-grandma watch the kids? Your children are. So if, in fact, they're upset with you, I would have to question why. What's their thinking? And furthermore, kind of, it isn't really any of their business, just like it isn't any of mine, what you decide to do regarding this whole scenario. You know the demands on your time. You know your energy level. You know your desire at age 50 to do certain things. And if people are going to get upset with you because somehow you're a deficient grandma because you don't want to watch these little ones, 3, 2, and 7 months, man, it makes me tired just thinking about it. And I was involved with 10 of them. Well, I wasn't. My wife was. But I did UPS her things on their birthdays. So I hope I helped you on this. Sure would like to hear how it all turns out. Dr. Ray.
In her diary, Saint Faustina wrote, "If only I had a spiritual director from the beginning, I would not have wasted so many of God's graces. If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we?" The nonprofit Revive app lets you meet virtually with certified spiritual companions, scheduling sessions at your convenience, helping you grow closer to Christ. Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3.
Hello, Steve Ray here from Footprints of God Pilgrimages. The land of our Lord and our Lady is calling us. We're heading back to the Holy Land over Christmas break this year. We have the best, most reliable guides and services awaiting us. The holy sites are open, and the local Christians are anxious to see us. Galilee, Jerusalem, Nazareth, Bethlehem. No crowds, no lines. Hope you can join us.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at avemariaradio.net. That's avemariaradio.net.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA. Or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Last segment here on The Doctor Is In on this E-Person Monday. Dr. Ray, I have been considering... Now, when she says I've been considering, that means she's going to ask my opinion because she's considering this. And she wants the shrink to stamp it. Approved, rejected. I've been considering having my older kids, ages 9 to 14, read certain books for a small amount of money. Hey, wait a minute. If they're going to read one of my books, I don't think they need paid, you know? I mean, you might have them give them 10 bucks to read Teresa Tomeo's book or something like that, but maybe a penny you can give them for mine. I picked the book, something that would educate them on our faith, and I would entice them by putting money in their savings accounts that they have for college or saving for a car once they finish. What say you, Dr. Ray? Well, I think if you're going to pay them, you're going to get more cooperation if you pay them on the spot, especially the nine-year-old. That child is not thinking about, good, you're putting money, a buck a book, in my savings account for college. They ain't thinking that far down the road. I mean, it may work. You know your kids, but the farther away the reward is, the simple 101 of behavioral psychology, the less likely the behavior is to earn the reward. You could do that, though. However, I think there's a consideration here, as you asked. These would be books that would catechize them on our faith, morals, virtues, etc. These are books they wouldn't normally pick up on their own. And would do a much better job than I could educating them on things of that nature. Well, Mom, I would suggest perhaps a variant. A variant would be, here's a book that you need to read, and you need to write a couple paragraphs about it. The older kids, maybe more. The younger kids maybe can just sit down and tell you what they read. And you'll have to, of course, pick books commensurate with their age, their developmental age. A 14-year-old could probably, if it's a bright kid, read something that is pretty good in terms of apologetics. Don't pay them to read my books. Do not do that. I'd be insulted. They should say, oh, Dr. Ray's book? Mom, I will pay you money if you let me read this. So that said, what if you did this? Here's your assignment. I want you to read this book. Now, the privileges that you have are going to be depending upon having read this book. I want you to read it. It's good for you.
Oh, I wouldn't read that book. Why would you? Mom, there's no way. Come on, that's a big book. That's got like 47 pages. It doesn't even have any pictures.
You decide what you want them to read. You give them, say, 2 days to do it, 3 days to do it, whatever your time frame is. And then you say, if at the end of that time you have not read the book and told me about it or written about it, you don't have any privileges. The book is a key to privileges.
Oh, Dr. Ray, what a dumb idea. What you're doing is you're saying you're going to force them to read a book to earn privileges.
Yes. Yes, I am.
That's terrible. Oh, really? Then don't send them to school. Because they force them to read books at school, and they don't even earn any privileges for it.
You force them to eat their vegetables. That's force, you know. You do all kinds of things for their good that they don't like, that they resist. And I got to believe that some of them are going to appreciate some of those books they read. I think that's a great idea. Wish I'd have done it. My kids probably, well, they were homeschooled, so their mom had them read all kinds of books. But she couldn't get them to read mine. I kept saying, all right, honey, tell them I'll pay them a buck a word reading my book. Now, some of those books have 25,000 words. Hey, that's not bad. Fortunately, my wife vetoed that, but I was desperate. Just as an aside, by the way, in the past, I have given my adult kids one of my titles for Christmas or something. You know, I just handed it to them, my Thinking Like Jesus book.
I don't know if any of them read them. But they looked at social media, though. All right. This is Dr. Ray. Thank you for joining me here on this E-Person Monday. I guess I would pay you if you listen to the program. I think that would be really, really cool. I don't know how much I'd pay you, though. Walk with God. He doesn't expect money for that. Small payment. Your eternal salvation.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
The End.